And the slides for the talks that will be here have been uploaded by now, so you can download them.
Thank you. morning, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome everybody to our morning session here in this wonderful, newly equipped lecture hall. Although we won't use the WFS system now for the talks and for the discussion, but you will later have the opportunity again to listen to the loop of compositions composed for this system. My name is Stefan Weinzel. I'm heading the department hosting this conference, the Department of Audio Communication at the Technical University. And we will have two keynote speakers this morning that I would like to announce. This is Paul Davis, known probably to most of you or everybody of you as the developer of Arduino and coming from Philadelphia to this conference. And the second keynote speaker will be Stefan Ebers, who's working on his PhD at the moment here at the Technical University. His PhD about open source software development. So we will have two talks, one from the audio perspective, from the perspective of an audio developer, and the second one having a broader perspective of the structural
Hello?
Aspects
Hello?
Of open source
Hello?
Software development. And so we are proud to announce Paul Davis as the first keynote speaker.
Well, it's very nice to be back at the fifth auditorium conference. I haven't missed one yet. I thought there'll be many more.
Crashing into the 80-20 limit.
So we've been doing this conference for 5 years now, but I just wanted to start with a little retrospective scan of what the last several years have looked like. And 7 years ago, the state of audio on Linux was pretty dismal. We had no alpha in the kernel, which is our device driver layer. There was no way of getting audio in between applications. Nothing could support the, not 96 kilohertz, which had already become something of a standard in the industry. There was no support for 24-bit samples. Most applications assumed you could just fit sound files in memory. And there was no low latency kernel, which means that if you were interested in doing anything that required low latency, you just couldn't. But we did have OSS, thank God. OSS in this context, for anybody who doesn't know, is the old Linux audio driver system, not open source software. So 5 years ago, when the Linux Audio Conference started, things were a little bit improved. Not a whole lot, though. We still did not have ALSA inside of the kernel. If you wanted to use ALSA, it was necessary to build it yourself and install a set of modules or compile it as part of the kernel. We did have Jack, but it wasn't that reliable. Those people who were at the first one of these conferences at the ZKM may remember me doing a demonstration and talk about Jack, in which he just kept crashing over and over when I would restart it from a command line. It was pretty embarrassing, although exciting too. And we've already gotten to the point where we had low latency kernel patches, so you could actually improve the performance of your Linux kernel to be able to do low latency audio. But you had to do them yourself. There were no pre-built kernels out there, and those patches were changing pretty rapidly all the time. And they were absolutely necessary. And we still have OSS in there too. So by 3 years ago, we got ALSA into the kernel. I said we. I should really say that Yaroslav and Takashi got ALSA into the kernel. Jack had turned into pretty much of a standard, at least for people who are writing pro audio and music applications, in the sense that almost every new application was supporting Jack, and quite a few older applications were being changed in order to work with Jack. The 2.6 kernel came out to do a fair amount of fanfare, and of course turned out to be much worse than what we were all used to at that time. If you were doing multimedia work of any kind, when the 2.6 kernel first came out, there was a sudden step backwards. And for quite a long time, many people, including myself, stayed with the older version of the Linux kernel just because the new one wasn't really usable. Otter, my own core project, was going through some interesting work. We had an interesting demonstration at the Linux Audio Conference that year, in which I probably swore more in an hour than I ever done in my entire life, as Otter crashed on keystroke after keystroke. And I believe it was also that year that there was a demonstration of supporting Windows VST plugins on Linux for the first time. But we had two separate pieces of technology for doing that. There was Kepetl Azusa VST server and FST, which Torben Hohn and myself had worked on. So that, you know, that was actually quite an exciting breakthrough. I remember doing shots of, live demonstrations of Contact running repeatedly on Linux. And in the background, of course, we still have OSS floating around. So 2 years ago, Ingo Molnar had once again stepped up to the plate and had produced a bunch of nice low latency patches for the 2.6 kernel that actually made the 2.6 kernel way better for low latency work than the older 2.4 kernel. You still needed them because the 2.6 kernel that was being released by kernel.org was still not very usable for low latency work. Otter had gotten to the fabulous point of not crashing at an actual talk and demonstration rather than just what I worked at home. We also had a demonstration from Peter at FreeBob, which I found extremely exciting in the sense that it was very clear that a lot of the new audio interfaces that were coming out were all going to be using FireWire, and the idea that we could support those on Linux was exciting and rather necessary. I think Stefan Letzer that year also gave us a demonstration of his new implementation of Jack that was tuned for making use of multiprocessor systems. And in the meantime, most desktop audio applications, which we traditionally haven't really focused on very much at this conference, still use OSS for their audio. So last year, we got to the point where the 2.6 kernel had almost become usable without any patches. The various kernel people who are responsible, including Linus, had accepted quite a lot of Ingo's work. And you're now at the point where the regular mainstream kernel can be used to get latency down quite low. Not super low, but low enough for the vast majority of people, but certainly low enough that most multimedia applications can be run off on an out-of-the-box kernel. It was also a year in which I had the benefit of a couple of reasonably successful commercial companies supporting the work I'd been doing with Otter, which looked at least at that point as though, you know, there might be an interesting corner being turned in the sense of more commercial interest in open source and specifically Linux audio software. And also we had the emergence again of a new FireWire chipset that was likely to become the standard for new interfaces. And there was a meeting at the conference last year. It wasn't really part of the talk, but several people were there to discuss how this would get supported on Linux. And at long last, some desktop applications have started to use ALSA, although most still use OSS. So since the conference last year, FreeBob 1.0 has been released. So in theory, it's now possible for people to just do a regular package installation of FireWire audio drivers and then use Jack on their PreSonus or some audio devices, I think, and a bunch of other manufactured products. We have the GStreamer intra-application framework now supporting Jack.io, which opens up a whole bunch of desktop applications to interacting with Jack, which now means that you can use your music player, Amarok or Rhythmbox or several others that are capable of using GStreamer and have them playing out through Jack at the same time as you're using music applications. We've also been begun to see the emergence of new APIs like Pulse Audio, offering a little bit of hope for a more unified situation with regard to programming audio applications, both for the desktop and for pro audio and music users. And as we saw just a day or two ago, we have support for the Dice 2 chip now for FireWire interfaces. But in face of all of this, I heard an interesting story from some people at Red Hat just before Christmas last year, that they still get independent software vendors showing up and saying, well, we'd like to run an application that uses audio, what API should we use? And Red Hat says, well, what do you want to run on? They say, well, we'd like to support Red Hat 7 or not. Well, Red Hat 7 has no ALSA in it. They're still telling people to write new applications that use OSS. So let's get down to the meat of what I wanted to try to talk about today, or maybe we could not talk about, the 80-20 rule. The room's full of a lot of software people, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with some version of this rule, is that 80% of the work takes 20% of the time, and the remaining 20% of the work takes 80% of the time. Anyone who's written more than a trivial piece of software will have had some kind of experience of this rule. There's a variant, the 90-10 rule, even more extreme. There's another variant, which is the 90-80-2 rule, which I've had some experience of as well. It's extremely hard to avoid this. I don't know why. It seems to be a pattern in the way that we write software. It's possible that when Don Luce wrote Tech, that he was able to avoid this just the same way as he was able to avoid virtually all parts. But I think more or less everybody else runs into a variation of this rule when they write software. And it's something that you probably need to be aware of when you start writing a piece of software rather than waking up to in the middle. It's certainly something you need to be aware of when you're thinking about a broader software ecosystem, such as all of the interacting applications that we have on Linux for audio. So what does this actually mean on Linux? Well, it means right now we have support for most PCI or audio interfaces. Most USB interfaces, and we have some kind of functionality available for FireWire interfaces as well, which is about 80% of what we actually need. We have applications that do about 80% of the tasks that people want. And we have a bunch of frameworks, like Jack, like GStreamer, various plugin APIs and so on, that all do about 80% plus or minus 10% of what we need and want them to do. And the end result of all of this is we have a set of fairly pretty applications that do about 80% of what people actually want. And just so we don't all get too down and upset about this, or so I don't get too down and upset about it, I thought we'd just have a nice little glossy slideshow to sort of show that we really do have some damn cool applications by any standards. Compared to any of the proprietary applications, there's some stuff out there that is just really fantastic. So, it's great that we've got 80%. We have to step back at some point and say what the users want. This is skipping around the slightly tricky part of that I realized in a brief conversation with folks that